All right. What's up, everyone? It's me, it's Austin, coming to you live from the apocalypse in the Blanket Fort in North Hollywood. It's day 10 of since Mary and I started trying to stay in our apartment except to go to the store or take a walk around the neighborhood. We took a walk a few days ago, and we saw a couple really cute dogs out on the walk, and we couldn't pet the dogs. It was really hard, okay? But that's just us doing our part. You know, we just had to see the dogs and kind of like look at their owners from a safe distance and sort of nod to them and like acknowledge that we see the cute dog, but we couldn't go pet it. And it was tough, but we did it. I went to the store today. It's Tuesday. If you're in California, Tuesday, we found out, is the day when a lot of stores are getting their new shipments in. I don't know, wherever you're at, you could look up like what's the day that stores get their new shipments in if you haven't already done this, but boy, it really made all the difference to go on the day when they get the new shipments in. I had to wait in line outside the store to get in, but it was worth it. I went in there and they had all the stuff that I was looking for. They had my teas. They had the medicine that I was looking for. I got hand soap, you guys. I got hand soap at the store today. Okay? So, produce section was full. It was great. It was awesome. It made me feel like, okay, so what I have to do is I just need to be coming in on the right day and I can still get the things I need. Cool. Before we start here, going to do a quick reading of a review. If it's your first time listening to People Pleaser, hi, welcome in. Welcome to People Pleaser. Glad to have you here. One thing we do on the show here before we get started every week is people can leave 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and write a review, and I read those reviews on the show and I review those people back. So the one I'm going to read today is called Something to Look Forward To, and it's from Dustin 8. This is, I believe it's Dustin Bolt, a friend of mine from college. And Dustin writes, I look forward to joining Austin in the Blanky Fort each week. It helps the hours go by at work. Not only that, I actually like to listen to what they're talking about. In the episodes where they talk about addiction, it's great hearing Austin and his guests' perspectives and stories on their recovery journey. It's very inspirational, touching, and hilarious at times. A+ content, 10 out of 10, recommend. So you got that? It's a 5-star rating and A+ and 10 out of 10. That's like all the best things that it can be, okay? I only say that you have to rate it 5 stars. I don't say that you have to give it A+ or 10 out of 10. He just did that because that's just how he feels in his heart, okay? And then when I read it, the thing is, I review you back. So let me say a few nice things about my very, very, very good friend, Dustin Bolt. You can look up Dustin right now on Instagram, dustin.bolt. Dustin has been recording himself singing every day during the quarantine, singing different show tunes, and Dustin just has such a buttery, beautiful singing voice. So you can go listen to Dustin in his colorful, fun outfits, singing beautiful songs for you right now. But not only is Dustin a beautiful singer, he's also just an incredible actor and performer. He's such an empathetic and natural, believable human actor and performer, and he brings that to his singing. So he mixes those two together and he gets right inside your heart and soul. He's such a hard worker. I've had the pleasure and the honor of sharing the stage with him many, many times, and he's always just, he blows me away with his commitment, his work ethic, his commitment to always, you know, bettering himself in his craft and always getting better at what he does. He's a cat dad to, like, I don't know how many cats Dustin has now, like 5 or 6 cats, and he's hilarious about it on Instagram, so that's another reason to follow him. He's a talented photographer. He's just, like, you know, he's a go-getter. He's an independent doer and a mover and shaker. And I love him, and he's, you know, one of my favorite people. We lived together in college, and those were good times. I love you, Dustin, if you're listening. Hope you're staying safe out there, and keep posting videos of you singing, because we need that stuff right now. From all of y'all out there, post your videos of you singing and you doing fun things right now. I had a moment where I was thinking, like, is it worth it for me to keep putting out episodes of the show right now? Are people even listening? And yeah, listenership has dropped off a little bit. I think when you lose, you know, people aren't listening on their commutes or aren't listening when they would normally be listening. So listenership has dropped off a little bit, but I think I'm going to keep putting the show out there and give people a chance to catch up, you know, when things get a little bit back to normal, and put it out there for those of you who are still listening in, and those of you who are still there, thank you so much. And yeah, if people are out there asking for recommendations right now, I know I've seen it online. People have been like, what podcast should I be listening to right now while I'm doing nothing at home? Let them know about this show, you guys. And, you know, go on to Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review, and leave your rating in your review. Can't talk, but leave that and I'll read it and I'll review you back. Okay, that's how it works. And I'm really excited about this episode. I think that this episode, you're all going to really, really, really like it. And I'll shut up about it and just get to it. Here we go. This dude at a karaoke bar in Koreatown. Somehow it came up that he was a neuroscientist and that I had a podcast, and less than a week later he was in my living room talking to me about neurons and the exploration of the human brain. And I loved it because, for real, like, what even is a brain and how much do we really know about what it does or is capable of? Well, as my new neuroscientist friend will quickly inform you, a brain is simply a mushy lump of tissue that lives inside of your skull, and what we truly, decisively know about it is effectively nothing. And I'm gonna take his word for it because, as you'll no doubt hear, he's a lot smarter than me. But still, I gotta say that to a layperson like me, it seems like we actually do know so much about brains. Just like to me, it seems like we know a whole bunch about the ocean or outer space, but to an astrophysicist or oceanographer, the simple fact that we've only explored 1% of the ocean or 1/1,000,000,000% of the known universe is a maddening taunt that screams that what we actually know is essentially zip, zilch, nada. And that's one of those fun dichotomies that you run into more and more in life the further you get into it. The process of deciding to learn about something, learning a whole buttload about it, maybe even everything there is to know about it, only to come full circle into realizing that what is actually known is really very little. It's that contemplative humility that comes from sincere exploratory education. Brains teaching brains everything there is to know about the limitations of brains. And that's more or less what's happening on the show today. Two brains wearing biological mech suits discussing and wildly speculating about what brains might be in their totality, what they might be able to do, and ultimately what any of that information actually means. From a Blanketfoot recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my new friend, Daniel Calderon Sanchez, about brains. Today, we're talking about
neuroscience.
Neuroscience.
The science of the brain.
I was just going to ask you, what is neuroscience? Because, like, is that just it?
Yeah, it's the science of neurons, and neurons are only found in the brain. So I think that's where they got that word.
See, I didn't know that. I didn't know that neurons were only found in the brain.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, motor neurons, they're axons and send all throughout your body, but, like,
Do they originate in the brain? Is it like a signal that originates in that?
I mean, it's a lot of signals, not just a signal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very, very complicated. We're just now beginning to understand what the hell's going on. We're just now beginning to understand what makes up the brain. Like, the brain's such a weird organ, man.
When you say just now, do you mean like just now, or do you mean like last 100 years?
I guess what I mean, neuroscience as a scientific discipline is it's kind of like a newborn baby, man.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at other scientific disciplines, like mathematics, astronomy, anatomy, I mean, any other one, they've been around for like hundreds of years.
Yeah. Thousands.
And, yeah.
Mathematics, yeah. Yeah. It's very, very long.
Neuroscience deems Ramón y Cajal, who was a Spanish scientist, as the father of neuroscience.
And okay.
He was the one that was first able to use Golgi staining to basically label the morphology of neurons, and he drew them. He's like, this is a cell that's found in the brain and nowhere else in the body.
How did he discover? Did he discover this?
He discovered the technique. I'm not really familiar with the specifics, but
did he discover neurons and recognize them as a unique thing too?
Yeah, he's credited to be the first one to describe the morphology of neurons and be like, this is something different than any other cell that makes up us.
What's his name?
Ramón y Cajal.
Y Cajal.
Sounds like two names, but I think that's how they did it.
Because it almost sounds like you're saying Ramón and Cajal. Cajal,
yeah, but that's one guy. He's one person. Yeah, he lived like, I'm not sure exactly what date, but less than 150 years ago. Like, I think about 100, between 100 and 150 years. And that was the birthplace. And I mean, from then on.
Did it catch on like wildfire, or did it take a while?
Took a while, man. Because like the thing about this discipline is it's hard to study it because you need a pretty advanced technology to even dive into like the specifics. And so it's taken a while for like other disciplines like chemistry, biochemistry to develop far enough to actually like be able to extrapolate these specific mechanisms that are going on. And so it's a newborn baby. We're just now getting the necessary technology needed to like actually dive into it and try and explore how it is it works.
Yeah, how recently did we like make those little hats that people wear with all the little sensors on them? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. The EEG, electroencephalogram.
Yeah, how long ago did we start having those?
Not long ago, man. I think like less than 100, like 80 years ago. And those
EEGs are 80 years old?
Yeah.
I didn't think that. I thought you would say like 1960s or 1970s.
Well, I mean, they're models. It's not like once it's discovered, it stays the exact same and we've been using the exact same technology. Like they've gotten a lot more sensitive and been able to pick up more, I think it's differences in electricity is what they pick up.
Okay.
Because that's how the brain communicates, is circuits. Just mm-hmm. like, I don't know, just like your phone communicates in the motherboard is like...
Except it's just a lump of...
Of matter.
Of
yeah,
and, gray matter.
Yeah, and the electricity is a bit different in that we think of like a lightning bolt when we think of electricity. But right. In reality, it's just the exchange of ions. Ions that carry either positive or negative charges.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't look like blue electricity shooting through.
No.
That's how it's always shown too in like infographs or like in like...
Like the synapses where it goes like...
Yeah, animations that we see where it's like the brain shoots out electronic pulses and we see like blue electricity going...
Yeah, instead it's shooting. More of the propagation of the exchange of these specific ions like calcium and potassium and... which are positively charged, and chloride, which is negatively charged, that causes this. I mean, it is electricity at the very basic level, which actually, like, transistors, which is basically the main unit of exchange that, like, our cell phones use the exact same thing. That's why technology nowadays has been able to get so small, is because we're able to make these transistors that exchange ions very, very tiny, down to, like, the size of a molecule.
Did we base that off of what we found in
the brain?
In the brain?
I don't know, man. That's a really good question. Obviously everything's like intertwined. If you learn something about something, you can then apply that new knowledge to something else.
So. Some brain learned this thing about a brain and then applied it to another little microbrain that it was making.
Yeah, exactly. I do think that computers, I mean, the whole essence of a computer is we're designing it to do what we can do.
Right.
Which is compute, but at a very basic level using the same sorts of mechanisms that we are now understanding the brain can do, which is really, really weird.
Brains
really
replicating themselves in a way other than sexual reproduction.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah, like physically creating other brains, but they're very rudimentary. And very, which we think of our phones as phenomenal
super
devices.
Advanced, but they're not.
But they're incredibly rudimentary compared to this lump of weird meat. Have you ever heard that? There's a short story called, like, They're Made of Meat. Have you ever heard that?
No.
It's basically just these two, it's like a scene, and it's these two aliens talking about, they're observing Earth, and they're going, like, they're made of meat. And the other one's like, they're what? And he's like, they're made of meat. And he goes, what do you mean? And he's like their organs and like their central processing units are meat. They're lumps of meat. And they're like, huh? He's like, how is that possible? And he's like, yeah, it's the same one that we have in our heads, but it's just made of meat. And it is like such a weird thing to think about where it's like, because all the things that we think of as electronic devices that transmute ions the way that you're saying, we think of computers and phones and TVs that are receiving signals and that have the capability of being receivers, but we have those things inside of our bodies and they're thousands of times more powerful and
millions of times more complicated.
And they're made of they're these like lumps of organic material. It's so bizarre.
Organic material, that's so true. Yeah. You know, a conversation I was just having with my fiance, she's an artist. Mm-hmm. So we're like completely spectrum opposites. And I don't know how we got into the topic, but we got on the topic of matter.
Uh-huh.
And what is matter? Or why does it matter?
Why the fuck does it matter? I don't know.
But we were like, matter is atoms. Atoms are elements, and they make up everything around us. We are made of matter, and we are just made of organic matter, as you say.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at a periodic table, which we were all forced to do in like grade school, you see that there's so many types of elements, but some of them are deemed organic, like carbon and oxygen and nitrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And these are only deemed organic because they're the types of elements that are found in
animals,
organisms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we're made up of everything. And even the inanimate objects in front of you, like this table, are also made of atoms. They're just inorganic atoms. I don't know. Everything is down to like the very basic thing. Everything starts out small, builds and builds and builds. And yeah, I mean, going back to what we were speaking about, the computers are super, super simple. They're just basic code. And the code is binary. It's two things that make it up. It's either a one or a zero. And everything that your computer, everything that your phone, everything that Google, everything you can do is just a different sequence of ones and zeros. And that's it.
Already I'm like, okay, I'm gonna have to put on my big boy hat to keep.
Before we go any further, I want to say I do not in any way consider myself an expert. I have a bachelor's of science in neuroscience, and that's as far as my education goes so far. I am interested in.
Well, but you know more than I do, which I think is always good for the guests to be in that position. Okay, so that's a good loose answer to the big question, what is neuroscience?
Right.
Like, let's go a little bit back. Why the bachelor's degree in neuroscience? Why did you want to study neuroscience?
All right, so we're getting in the weeds. I have a strange background. Mm-hmm. I mean, thinking of all the people I've interacted in my life, it's probably less than 10,000, but that I've actually like communicated with. But what I'm trying to say is I feel like I have a very unique background story.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously in the broad spectrum of the whole planet, it's probably not that unique, and it's probably really common. I'm just I feel very fortunate. So
you feel like you haven't met many people that have a similar
exactly
story.
I got thank you for saying what I'm trying to say.
I feel you.
So growing up, I never really took anything seriously. I always enjoyed school, and I knew that much, and I enjoyed learning, and I seemed to differ in my friends or most of the people I knew, because most people, I grew up in a small town in Indiana, most people there, they hated school. They're like, oh, why do we have to go? And I never really sympathized with them, because I was like, why are you complaining about this? We go to a really nice place, we spend 8 hours a day there, we get fed, and then we learn, and then we go home. Like, that seems like a really good deal to me.
That's like the best attitude I've ever heard about school.
Yeah, man. I loved school. Loved it even in college. I don't know. I guess I've been fortunate. I never really struggled with like any of like the topics or anything like that. But I went through grade school. I never took anything serious. I was like, yeah, I'm here. And I did well in my classes. I got good grades. I was never really that serious about it. It's not like I wanted to get that 4.0 GPA or anything like that. But I went through grade school not thinking about it. Got to high school, and freshman and sophomore year go by, and I'm still not really thinking anything much about it. But then my friends start considering college, and I'm like, oh shit, college. I guess I should start considering that too. And then we got to senior year, and I was fortunate enough.
See, that's weird that you liked school so much, but you were like, you're like, oh, I guess college too.
Yeah,
I guess.
I was just like, I was just drifted onto it. I was like, I guess that's the next step. All right, well, what are we gonna
do? More school.
Yeah, but I wonder where I would have gone if nobody would have considered that. I probably wouldn't have considered it either. Yeah. I don't know.
Have pressure from your family to go to college, or
no, not really. So I come from an immigrant family, and I came to the U.S. when I was 7. I came from Mexico City, Mexico, and
I think my friend Renato's from Mexico City.
Yeah. I moved here when I was 7.
I might be wrong that he's from Mexico, but he might not be from Mexico City.
That's all right. And my parents are really hardworking people. But no, I was never pressured. I was never even talked to about, hey, what are your next plans? I did well in school, and I guess that was enough for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I get to this point in my life where I'm like, all right, what am I interested in?
Yeah.
And luckily, at that point, I was one of 18 students in our whole region of like 5 high schools. And these high schools are small, like 500 kids in each. To be admitted into this technical program my senior year. And this technical program basically involved, it was whole year, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. The first semester was all book work. It was called Science and Careers, Health Careers, sorry. Health Careers was the name of the technical program. The first semester was all book work, learning anatomy, learning vocabulary, getting CPR certified and everything like that. But the second semester is when things really start going crazy, because that's when 3 hours a day we would just shadow all different personnel in my local hospital. And there, I got to go through the ER and the ICU, everything. And it was there where I stumbled upon this unit called Generations.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there for a week, and that's my first taste of patients with severe mental disorders,
mm-hmm.
like Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yeah.
And it was these elderly people that that were just so out of it. And when I first got to interact with these, I mean, obviously I have to do work. I have to like feed them breakfast and everything like that. Initially I was like, oh, these people are probably just sick. Like, you get sick and then you can get better with like medication and the proper treatment.
Yeah, no, not those diseases.
Not those. No. Yeah, and that was completely new to me. I was always fascinated with the brain. I always watched like the documentaries on like the Discovery Channel and like Nat Geo about like the brain. And I was always like, man, the brain is really fascinating. But that's what really intrigued me. Because I spoke to these people, and the nurse that was there, she had been there for like years. And she was like, yeah, like I'll show you how serious their symptoms are. And like, we went over to like this elderly man that was like 82, 83 years old. And he was like bed stuck for like a while. He had been an inpatient for quite some time by then. And she was like, hey, Bill, I don't remember the guy's name. What year do you think it is? And Bill was like, oh, it's 2007, right? About to be 2008. Being 2015. Uh-huh. So this guy was like 7 years, right off the bat, 7 years like gone.
Yeah.
Like, how can he think that? Mm. And then it got even more drastic. What season is it? The window's open and it's summer outside. And he's like, oh, it's about to be fall, right? Or something like that. Just completely out of touch. Mm. And I was just like, my jaw hit the floor. I was like, what? How are these people so out of touch with the world around them?
Yeah.
So it was through those interactions that I became like super, super, super intrigued. And I was like, all right, I got to do some research on the internet. What the hell's going on with these people? And that's where I stumbled upon, like, I did my first reading on like Alzheimer's disease and like dementia. And the thing that really struck me was like, we don't know anything about it. We don't know what causes it. We don't know what can increase your risk. We don't know how to decrease your risk. All we know is that it seems to run in the family.
We have theories.
Yeah. And we have different theories about like the inner workings of it. But ultimately, we know nothing. We're trying to learn more. And I was like, dang. And that's when I was really like, I don't know. I was very captivated. And I seemed to get this like this sense. Maybe I was like daydreaming to myself. But I was like, you know, this to me seems like a forest in pitch black. Mm-hmm. And the answer to these questions that we're looking for is somewhere in the middle of the forest, but we seem to be on the outside and we have to find our way to the middle, to the answers. And I guess at that moment, I kind of devoted myself, as far as my career goes, to shed some light on the path towards understanding. And I was like, man, I'm really curious. I wanna help. I wanna contribute. I wanna help. And so,
thank God for people like you. Because I mean, I when I was in my early 20s, I worked for a hospice company, and I had a lot of patients who had Alzheimer's or dementia. Oh, yeah. And it definitely. I mean, I didn't have the same response that you had, where I went, I'm gonna devote my life to figuring out what's going on here. I just thought, this is really sad.
Yeah, no, I was just. It is sad, man. And that's one of the things that captivated me, because like these patients in my time there, they would have like their family come by, and it seemed almost worse to me for the family to see them in that state than to just have them pass.
Yeah.
Because like, imagine you're going to visit your dad, you know, the person that raised you.
And they
you.
Don't know who you are.
Exactly. Yeah. And they're like, get away from me. Sometimes they freak out. Yeah. They get defensive.
Yeah.
I don't know who you are. Get the hell away from me.
I had a guy who... his wife was kind of his touchstone. As long as she was around, he was somewhat cogent. Yeah. And he sort of knew where he was.
Something familiar.
She was kind of his, yeah. But the second she left the room, the lights went off and he was scared and who are you? What are you doing here? But it was really, it was really touching to see how his wife kind of brought everything back for him and was kind of his touchstone. But what was sad is he really had no idea who his son was that would come and visit sometimes. If someone would come and visit, and he never knew who his son was. And he would always ask his son, who are you? You know, and his son would say, I'm your son, Dad. And he would go, I got kids? Jeez. And it's really hard. You know, really, like, really difficult.
Yeah, I can't imagine what that would be like if I were just to go up to my mother and be like, I'm your son. And she'd be like, I don't know who you are. Like, that's devastating, man.
It's almost a fate worse than death.
Exactly. That's really what, mm-hmm. I mean, and there's a lot of factors that got me really excited about it. Like another one was, as we were talking earlier, how new it is and how we're just beginning to like dive into like the thick of it. You know, we're like at the tip of the iceberg.
It seems to me that there's something that people like you and people like that, you have an explorer's spirit, you know?
It is like that.
You know, cause it's like, There's not much land left to explore, you know, like then the oceans. I mean, well, we've sailed all the seas and we've found all the continents and
what's underneath though?
Yeah. Oh my God. We haven't even scratched the underbelly of what's.
Yeah. And there's something exciting about it, you know, like what's out there, man?
It's a whole other planet under those blue waves.
And it's the same thing with the brain, man. Yeah. Like, all right.
I think it's an explorer's game because it's like you said, it's that forest, that dark forest where we're like, it's this lump of stuff. And we've scratched the surface of like figuring out the the very, 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 very basics of how it functions, but we haven't probably gotten to 1%
We know a lot, but we don't know shit.
Because it's still, I mean, there's so many unresolved things. Like,
it's so complicated, man. There's so many rolling, moving parts. I mean, there's just so much to it.
Well, so a big question I have that I would want to posit to you and get your, I mean, obviously I don't think that this is, I know we're not at a place where we know an answer to this question, but I'm wondering if this is something that maybe drew you or something that you think about. Like, essentially, is my brain me? Like, where am I? Or is it just the engine that runs the body? Or is it the engine that also runs the mind? Is it responsible? Is somewhere in that lump and somewhere in the gray matter the key to consciousness and, like, self and the mind? Is that all just part of the exchange of ions and the electricity? Or, like, is – because what I speculate is that's just the answer to that is we just don't know.
we really don't. I mean, there's no way to actually get a definite truth to the question you're asking, but it's a question that I've also wondered about and I've spent some time thinking about. I don't know. Like, if you would have asked me 5 years ago, hey, Danny, what are you? Are you a brain with a body? Are you a body with a brain?
Or a soul with a body and a brain?
Oh, well, the soul's completely different. Don't throw the soul in here. You're complicating things so much.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like,
well, we're talking two of the things.
Yeah.
Two of the three that you just mentioned are tangible.
Yeah.
We can touch it. We can touch the brain and we can touch the body.
But that's the soul, thing is, like, is the soul generated by the brain?
Is the
self, the idea of that spark of individuality?
Who knows, man? I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't know. I don't know.
But that's probably why you're also interested in
exploring
those seas.
Yeah, and I guess the neuroscience is a discipline, and I'm sure every professional out there would agree with me, is the science of understanding the mechanism of the brain as an organ. Now, when you start throwing words around like soul and spirit and consciousness around, well, those are a little harder to study. They're actually impossible to study.
Maybe.
Well, at the point that we're at now.
Yeah. In a tangible.
Right, exactly.
Traditional scientifically based.
In an experimental way, it's impossible.
You can't put it under a microscope. You can't.
They could be a consequence of the mechanisms in the brain. Or they could
be something else,
something bigger, which is I don't know, man.
It's interesting to think of the brain as an engine that creates what we like, creates the conscious experience, that creates the self, and creates the that it just all exists in there. And I think the atheistic point of view is that that is what it is, that it's all just generated by that engine. But also I'm like, that doesn't necessarily, to me, mean that there isn't some spirit thing. Because just the idea that the brain's creating it and creating that experience doesn't mean that there isn't.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. And there's a lot of different paths to take. But it's all very exciting to me.
Well, because here's something that I was thinking about today.
All right. Shoot it.
Just like you were talking about matter and everything's made up of matter, I was thinking about math because my girlfriend's a math tutor and she was kind of going over some of her math notes, and I was like thinking about how if the universe is intelligently designed, which I don't believe that it is, but it doesn't really matter what I believe because, like, I just don't know.
Whether or not it is,
I personally don't think that, like, a person or, like, an intelligence designed the universe specifically and intentionally, like, so that we would be here. But I do definitely concede that there's just so much going on that I don't see and don't understand.
100%.
But if the universe is intelligently designed, let's just go with that. It seems like humans, like, discovering the language of math and discovering kind of the language of, like, laws of physics and how math – just the fact that math works.
Right.
That it's just like, oh, we've used math to, like, deduce what – planets are made up of.
Right.
Just,
and it all aligns. And you get the same thing every time.
And we get the same answers and it works. It seems almost like
peeling the curtain back and seeing the inner workings of like how whoever intelligently designed the shit did it.
Right.
And they utilized these things and we're like discovering the mechanism by which everything was made.
I get that too.
And so I think that's really cool. And I wonder if neuroscience is the same thing where it's like all the ineffable stuff, the experience of falling in love, the feeling of like grief and intense pain, emotional pain and distress, all that stuff that comes with the human experience and like anxiety and fear and depression and love and happiness and all that stuff. Studying the brain is peeling back the curtain and trying to see like what the actual nuts and bolts of all of it is.
Yeah.
And we're so, like you said, brand new baby.
Right.
We just started getting
torches. All those emotions are complex consequences of all of these mechanisms just chipping away at it.
And the other thing I thought is like, it's almost like if in the universe of like Harry Potter, say, where there's, or anywhere where there's magic, you know, rather than it just being, oh no, you just say this spell and kind of wave your wand and this thing happens. If someone was like, but I can actually tell you why. I can actually tell you why that spell
works. That's very intriguing.
And I can actually get into like the nuts and bolts of what's actually physiologically happening with the atmosphere and with the world when you say those words and wave your hands like that and that thing happens.
Right.
You know, like that's, rather than just going, it's magic.
Right.
Like it's just intelligent design.
Oh,
it's
there's
just,
some romance to the answer. Yeah. Tell me the answer,
God,
man.
God snapped his fingers and everything was, but it's like, yeah, but why does math work then?
Yeah.
That seems to mean, that seems to imply that there's some nuts and bolts to all of this.
Right, yeah, it does. Actual... It does seem like, I've never looked at math that way, but you know it does. Mean? Yeah, I've always, I had a buddy who wrote a paper once under the topic, was math discovered or invented?
I think it was discovered!
Well, but you could also look at it the other way, perspective.
It's a language. So we had to write it. We had to come up with the language.
Right.
But, and our language for it maybe isn't the same language for whatever incepted the universe, if something did. But if nothing did, then there is no language for it. We just created a language for it, just like we created a language for time and for, you know what I mean?
The correlations are out there. Yeah. We choose to view it as one way that we know as mathematics to us beings.
Yeah.
But the correlations would still be there even if you were to look at it at a completely different angle.
Which if we met another species, another intelligent species from another planet, the chances that they would use the same language for their math that we use for ours is actually almost impossible. So we usually think that we could find some way to communicate with them through mathematics or because it seems to us to be like a universally understood
language.
Seems
so intuitive.
And so intuitive, but it's like, of course they would have a different mechanism of getting at that same thing.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, whatever their way into understanding the nuts and bolts was. And maybe their math allowed them to find back doors and allows them to travel interstellarly or something. Maybe they used a better language that allowed them to...
Who knows?
You know?
And there's different branches of mathematics. I mean, that's not what we're talking about here today, but mathematics is a very interesting topic.
But isn't it what we're talking about? Because if it's all math, and even if the ones and zeros, like you were saying, like everything Google does, everything my phone does, everything the computer does, ones and zeros, if it's the same way, basically, if you break it down to the cellular level with the brain, it's just millions of times more complex.
Right.
Couldn't it all be like the Matrix, seeing the code, like at the core?
Yeah, it could be.
All mathematics.
It could be.
At least in our language.
Right,
like, it would, you know, because it's not actually numbers. It's not actually multiplication signs and division signs and stuff.
It could be. It could be. Like down to the very, very basics.
So that leads me to my next question for you, which is, at this moment, can you speak to what we know? Like, how much do we know? I know that it's very little.
All right.
And you've said it's almost nothing.
Yeah.
But, like, can you say specific things that we are more or less certain of about the brain right now?
Well, being a scientist in a laboratory, I only focus on a particular subset of questions.
Okay.
Where it's not like I'm part of like the neuroscience lab and
we
study everything. So I can only attest to what I'm used to. And what we know is, well, the human genome was mapped out fairly recently, we now know everything that comprises the code that makes human beings. To add on top of that, we are just now beginning, and what my work involves is mapping out the specific circuits in the brain. So just to throw some facts out there, the average human brain, they say, has somewhere around, like, I don't know, 80 billion neurons, which, I mean, I can say that easily, but, like, can we really actually fathom what that number means? 80 billion?
10 times the number of people on the planet, and I can't really fathom the amount of people that there are on the planet.
Yeah, so, me either. Yeah. I mean, it's a crazy amount of number, but it even gets crazier.
Yeah.
Because each neuron, on average, communicates to 10,000 other neurons. So if you're talking connections in the brain, working connections, two neurons talking to each other, there's on average of 80 billion times 10,000, which is like 8 trillion connections.
Yeah.
Now, can you fathom that number?
No.
No, me either. I can't even, I mean, 1,000, 10,000, yeah, I can picture that. Above that.
But sure. Really, I mean, yeah, like that. In this sense, like, I'll fathom it the same way that I fathom, like, the size of the known universe, yeah. You know?
It's very complicated. There's a lot of pathways. There's a lot of roads within the brain. What we know is that everything is very woven together. Everything, it's not like one part is solely isolated and working on one specific subset of behaviors or output, whatever. What we know is
it's not like the movie Inside Out by Disney and Pixar, where there's like one specific little version of me.
Man, that movie. That movie got to me.
Did that work for you as a neuroscience?
That was exactly it. They figured it all out. No, like, it's
what
not
we
like
found
that.
Is that there's five little things of you inside that are running a little control center.
Man, that movie hit the nail on the head because that's exactly what I used to think of it like.
I still think of it like that. There's people arguing in my head all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there is, man.
There's multiple voices making the choices throughout the day that are like arguing about.
But me as a neuroscientist, I have to say that that's just a specific set of connections in your brain.
Okay.
It's not actually little people.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
All right.
No, yeah, but I mean, what do we know? We know that we are developing a lot more technology at an unprecedented rate. We know that there is an end to mapping out all the circuits. So we soon, in
it's not infinite.
It's finite.
Clearly, yeah.
So we can get an overall map soon. I would say within the next 10, 15 years.
Yeah.
And we know that once we have a map, we're going to have a good base to further explore, you know?
What does that look like? Do people want to – because, I mean, I've heard people talk about they want to map the brain and the circuit ways so that they can replicate it in machines. Is that what we're trying to do, is create a box where we can store human consciousness so people don't die?
Some people are trying to do that.
Yeah. Is that what we're trying to do? Are we trying to do it so we can repair things that are broken down by Alzheimer's or dementia?
Or all of the above? We're also trying to do that. We're trying to do everything. I mean, if you think of it back to like the analogy we were using as an exploration, you get to a new place, you first want to know what the hell's around you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that tree's over there, that stream is over there, I can set up my camp right here and use that and that and that and that.
Oh, it turns out there's bears in this area.
Yeah, maybe we should avoid that area.
Yeah.
So you first have to get a sense of what is around you, and that's what we're working on right now. But after we do that, then we can move forward with like the investigations and asking more complex questions. Okay, if that's connected to that and this is going wrong and we see clear evidence of this working with that, then maybe we can mess around with this and it'll interfere with that. I don't know. That's a very vague, super. Did you like that example?
But the funny thing is I'm like, I can. Yeah, I got you. Like,
did you get all that?
Everyone got that? If that's connected to this and that's interfering with that, then maybe if this connects with that, we can touch that.
Let me get another shot at it. All right. So it's like your car. Think of yourself driving down the highway, you know, You're having a good time listening to your tunes. And then all of a sudden, your hood starts smoking. You got to pull over. You open up the hood. In order, say you're a mechanic. The first thing that you have to know in order to fix a problem is know the components, right? You open up the hood.
Yeah, because I'm useless because I have no idea what's what.
Right.
Even if something's smoking, I don't know what that is or what it's connected to.
Exactly. So that's exactly that's exactly what we're working on right now. What is connected to what? That way we know exactly where to go.
We already know some of that stuff, don't we? Because like we're able to
at a very
to, like,
broad level.
Yeah, but we're able to do like very basic surgeries where like we know that we can like remove tumors or like we can like we know certain areas we can take out without killing the person. Or with you know what I mean?
Yeah, like recently I was learning a little bit about Parkinson's. Disease and how they actually have successfully implanted electrodes that spill out spurts of electricity to activate the certain area on the brain that they've pinpointed to be the cause of the tremors.
Okay.
And so with this, literally a wire inside that brain area spilling out bursts of electricity and activating this area that otherwise would be very inactivated. They can actually fix the tremors like tremendously. Like these people wouldn't even be able to hold a spoon and get a scoop of soup up to their mouth. And with this implant,
I think I heard about this on a podcast.
They're able to do that. They're able to do that. And that's phenomenal. And, again,
but that comes from seeing that this is the area that's affected, making the almost a deductive reasoning of like it, maybe these two things are connected, doing an experiment.
Right.
What happens if we do this? Oh, looks like
it works.
And that's the thing you were saying when you said this is connected to this. What happens if we put that in there?
That's exactly what I was trying to get to. Things like that. And although we might not know it at a very specific level, what exactly is biochemically happening to allow this to be fixed, we know that it's working. And that's enough.
Sometimes I feel like even hackers who understand coding in computers really, really well, with all the AI that's going on out there and all like the self-replication that's going on out there, I feel like sometimes what they're doing is just troubleshooting things, going, it looks like it's a problem with this part of your code. Like, what happens if I just put in a little patch here?
Right.
I don't know. Like, and it's like they're not even like 100% sure because it's such a complex network right now.
Exactly.
And then our brains are even more complex than that, but you can at least go, what happens if we put a little prod in that area?
So that's what we know.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there's a finite number of connections. We know that these connections connect certain areas. We know that certain areas, the brain is a very organized thing. If you were, I mean, most people have seen a brain. It looks like just a blob of bubbly tissue. But it's really, really, really well organized. And back to our point where maybe there's a designer behind all of this. It looks like the designer did a really, 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 really fantastic job of like putting everything together, because it seems to work miraculously and in cohesion together. So the brain has,
and every organism that we know of, like every intelligent organism has one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess not plants, but,
are they intelligent? I mean, see that gets to a very ambiguous conversation on what is intelligence?
Are they having a conscious experience or are they,
What is intelligence? We regard ourselves as the most intelligent being on this planet, but that's because we rule the planet and we've taken over it. But like, that's intelligence on our perspective, but like, what is
the... Do you contend with that?
That we are the most intelligent being on this planet?
Uh-huh.
I think we're the most powerful, but I seem to be hung up on what intelligence is. The way we look at intelligence is, okay, problem solving, the ability to adapt to an ever-changing environment, they say.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if that's the case, then yeah, we are the most intelligent. If that's the way you're looking at intelligence, then yeah, of course, I mean, fuck, we make our own environment.
Mm-hmm.
But other people, like spiritual people, might say, no, intelligence is actually being able to connect with your natural world and being able to find inner peace within yourself.
In which case, a tree is maybe the most intelligent.
Exactly. I mean, a tree is the most content organism I've ever seen.
See, I used to get so mad when people would argue that humans weren't the most intelligent beings on the earth. I used to be like, come on, look, I know that you're trying to be like super green and like that you're trying to be super like respectful of animals, but like, give me a fucking break.
Right.
Dolphins aren't making documentaries about octopuses. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like we're the only ones that are going down in machines that we've built to observe them and like take notes on their behavior. We're the only ones that have satellites orbiting the fucking planet. We're the only ones that have put a flag in the goddamn rock that orbits
right.
the planet. You know, but you just illustrated
yeah.
where I like my flaw perfectly, which is I'm coming at it from a perspective of intelligence, meaning tool creation.
Yeah, make no mistakes. We are always coming at it from a very biased point of view.
But goddamn, we're smart though.
Yeah, we're pretty smart.
Like, the fact that you and I, not the smartest people in the world, are having this conversation right now into devices that other people built that, like, record it and put it into my computer, and then I, like, send it to another person who throws, like, a filter on it and then broadcasts it to other people who listen to it through their cars and stuff. Like...
That's pretty smart.
And people listen to it and they have the conversation with themselves
and then
going,
they think,
oh, that's interesting. Blah, 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 blah. Like, humans are fucking crazy
yeah,
smart.
It's
you know?
Crazy. Yeah, we're very complicated.
Like, I went to the zoo the other day and it's amazing. Like, I love watching the chimpanzees. Like,
uh-huh.
I love seeing the chimps and the gorillas and because they're just so like us and it's so fascinating.
They look like us.
They look like us, especially the chimps. The chimps, like the chimps for like a while, I was watching them for a while and there was like six of them in a huddle and they were like, they looked like they were talking to each other. Like every once in a while, one would grab the other one around the shoulder and kind of pull his face to him and be like, and like point to him. Kind of like he was saying, like, listen, listen. Like, you know, and like, and then the guy would like push him off, like, ah, get out of here, you know? And then like, but then like, one of them would shit into his hand and kind of like start eating it. And I would be like, okay, well, he's eating his shit now.
Right.
So I don't know. But it's amazing. I watch them and I see how clearly emotionally intelligent they are and how like aware
social.
Of each other and social they are. But I'm also like, but here I am looking at them through glass and
yeah,
marveling.
They're the ones
with,
in a cage.
Right. Marveling with my superior brain about
yeah.
They're not really looking at me and going, wow, he's really like me, only he's wearing weird things. Like
right.
They're not even aware of the concept of what clothing is or what,
yeah.
you know, and so. So I,
yeah, man.
I think I do have a very biased perspective, but also it is hard to contend with.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it.
We built flying machines.
Yeah, we are the most powerful species that roams this planet.
Yeah, we are the species with the most capability to destroy the planet for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And with the most, we're the alpha predator.
Yeah, nothing competes with us.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But that's looking at things the way we look at them.
The way we look at them.
Right. And you should never forget that.
Mm-hmm.
That we're always coming from at it from a biased point of view. We're the ones that set the definitions on what intelligence is and what anything is. And so whenever we look at it, we're
yeah,
always going to be at the top.
Maybe a heightened spiritual intelligence is an ability to tap into kind of let that peeking behind the curtain that I was talking about earlier
mm-hmm.
with math and looking at the nuts and bolts of things.
Right.
Maybe a tree kind of lives that math, like literally just is tapped in to that nuts and bolts without even having to think about it. And like, is that, maybe that's what it is, you know, that spiritual intelligence and that
yeah.
like that thing that monks are after and that thing that people who spend their entire life immersed in transcendental meditation, maybe they're just trying to become one with the universal
right.
mechanism rather than trying to just like understand how it works.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know either. And
because people who go that route seem to also be really fucking smart.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, I don't know. I forget what we were even talking about when we got on this tangent.
Oh, we got on to intelligence. You said something about maybe humans being the most intelligent, and I was like, do you contend with that? Because it used to be a thing where if someone said, nah, I think dolphins are the most, I'd be like, fuck you. Like, show me a dolphin in a space suit, and like you've got an argument. But,
Yeah, no, we're definitely the, by our terms of the word, we are the most intelligent.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
we've talked about some of this, about, you know, the possible uses of mapping things and like how mapping can give us an understanding of the inner workings so that we can begin to fix the engine when the engine breaks down.
Yeah.
Other than the few things we've talked about, maybe patching holes with Parkinson's or different kind of neural conditions like dementia.
Ooh, I like where this is going.
What are we hoping to learn or know moving forward? Or do you have an idea of like things that are possibilities that could be on the horizon? And we could go 10 years or we could go 100 years or 1,000 years or, you know, if we think the species is going to be alive that long. But
well, what are we hoping to get out of it? Knowledge. We're just hoping to learn. I don't think, I mean, aside from like the different diseases and disorders that people suffer from, improving the quality of life, mm-hmm. aside from wanting to do that, I think we just want to know more. We want to feed this curiosity of like, why are we here? And why are we the way we are? And
that's that explorer spirit.
Yeah, man.
Why do you got to know what's out there? Just because I got to.
Yeah. Don't you?
Yeah.
Don't you want to know?
Why do we got to go up there? Because we got to just see if we can go up there.
Right. Like, we have to at least try.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that also like fascinates me about brain sciences is that I really think in our lifetime, I really think in the next 10 years, no more than, I think that the discoveries that are going to be made are going to substantially revolutionize the way we live. I think, you see it now with like for example, all these social media platforms and mm-hmm. how easy it is to talk to other people, somebody across the planet, I can just message at the tip of my fingertips. That came to be because somebody obviously did research in a certain thing, found out how to work two things, put two things together, and a lot of people put all their things together and made something happen. So I think we're hoping to progress that even more.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I come at it from a very optimistic point of view. But I think we're hoping to make our existence much more tolerable, pleasing, easy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what else.
Is there any possibility of there being discovered or uncovered some kind of key to like extra abilities, or is that science fiction? So like you and I talked about earlier, like I did an episode on dream science and mm-hmm. Or just dreams in general, and like, and I've talked a lot on this show about how I'm getting really into this idea that humans might be more extra dimensional than mm-hmm. they realize, and that we might have like that maybe like the experience of like being on the same page emotionally with someone, or like falling in love with someone, or sharing dream space with someone, like seeing someone in your dream and then they go, I saw you in my dream, and you go, I saw you in my dream, you know, that kind of stuff. Do you think that there's a possibility with studying the brains that we might unlock and go, oh, now we're telekinetic, you know, like we've just discovered a thing that if we put a little probe here and we push that and we activate this dormant sleeping thing.
Welcome to multiplayer mode.
You know, like, is there a possibility of that, or does that sound like science fiction to you?
I mean, no. Honestly, it's very hard. Sorry, I got a bit of a runny cold.
Everybody's that's going around right now.
I know, man.
That's part of it too. So first of all, it was the Mercury in retrograde thing, and then everyone's got a cold. So like,
it's all tied together.
Everyone's got a cold, and everyone's getting their ass kicked by Mercury in retrograde.
But what I was gonna say is, I find it hard to say that that's not a possibility because again, we know very little that we have no idea what's down under.
Mm-hmm.
We have no idea what kind of applications can be actually inputted. So I wouldn't find it unreasonable to think that that's not a possibility down the road. I mean, as far as like how long down the road, I can't say.
Well, because it's like I've also done episodes about drugs and about psychotropic drugs and about, you know, opening third eye. And then, you know, talking about meditation too, like the experience of trying to unlock that. It seems like there's these things that our brain can show us that, that sort of just lay dormant. And then you either add a little pixie dust on them or you go deep into a meditation and they get a little bit loosened up and unlocked. And all of a sudden you're communicating with, you know, sacred geometrical figures who are taking you through like the halls of creation, like DMT experiences and stuff like that. Like, do you think that there's a way where we could tap into whatever's being unlocked by DMT or LSD and just sort of make that part of the everyday human experience, where now people are seeing an extra plane of reality on on the regular? Like, we're like, and then we, because of that, that unlocks some kind of.
I definitely think that's possible. I definitely think that that could be a true reality, because a little more information on how the brain communicates. It communicates through electricity, but when two neurons meet, they meet at this thing called the synapse. And the way one communicates with the other is through neuromodulators, basically things that control neuronal function, brain function. And we're just now beginning to dive into, like, what kind of cocktail recipe does this neuron have to deliver to that neuron in order for this type of thing to occur?
Yeah.
And when you talk about like DMT or like oxytocin or THC, those are just drugs that either inhibit or activate certain combinations of these signaling molecules, these neuromodulators, to either be excreted or obviously stay back. And I think if we are, if we're able to truly figure out, for instance, I eat an eighth of mushrooms, okay?
Right.
I'm getting psilocybin. This psilocybin is changing my brain in this sort of way. Okay, well, most people report positive results to that. Oh, I feel more connected to my spirituality. I feel more connected to this world, and I feel more at ease, and I truly feel that there's something bigger other than us. Well, maybe if we're able to find out and do tests on people that are under these drugs, then we can get the positives and actually feed you a pill that only contains the positives of that drug, and you don't have to go and hallucinate for 8 hours of your day, where you can just get the positive results of that, because we've narrowed it down to these specific
Yeah, it changes. Doesn't need to be such an intense experience, but we can get the things, the stuff that's really that good stuff, where you're seeing some truth.
Yeah.
We can get that part of it without the freaky anxiety part of it.
A lot of people nowadays are into like microdosing. And then just taking the little small bits.
We're doing therapy with them. People are doing trauma therapy.
And apparently it's working really well.
Oh, I've heard that the results for both drug recovery, like drug addiction recovery, by like microdosing on MDMA and also trauma recovery are like really amazing. Like that they're having really great results by essentially, I guess, just opening up empathic pathways and then having a therapy session while you're in that state and being able to like unlock trauma.
Right.
Do you know anything about that? Do you know anything about like the way that trauma gets stored in the brain? Because I know that's a big problem in my life and in a lot of people's lives, where it's like you have a bad event happen and then it gets stored in you somewhere, and either you're carrying it in your shoulder blades or in your back, or it's, you know, and then sometimes it just gets unlocked. It gets, you know, cut loose by either a hyper spiritual experience or a drug trip or a, you know, or a.
Well, I used to work. So going back to my story about like how I got intrigued into it, I went to IU, Indiana University, go Hoosiers, and I went through my classes, and I my first neuroscience class, I was like super excited about it. It was very broad, but the professor was really cool, and he was the head of a memory lab, and his lab was dedicated to finding the mechanisms behind memory. How is it that I'm able to absorb this piece of information, encode it, and then later in time retrieve that information? What am I really retrieving? And that's what you're asking. Well, first of all, there's different types of memory. There's like motor memory, where like it involves your body movement, and there's episodic memory and semantic memory and all types of memory. But long-term memory seems to be basically an assembly of neurons that activate or communicate together in such a way that it creates an ensemble, a representation of a specific piece of information.
They like put on a play.
Yeah.
Of that time.
And every time you think about it, if I say, think of your mom, mm-hmm. you see a picture of your mom in your mind, and it's those that same group of neurons Whoa. Firing together. And that's what we know of as a memory. And again, there's so many connections,
yeah,
right?
That makes sense.
Trillions of connections that you can make so many patterns. And all those patterns are pieces of information.
I had that today. I was thinking about something sad that happened to me like a few months ago. And I was recalling the moment that like it first happened and like yeah. that I first found out. And it, yeah, to think of it like that, that like these neurons are like putting on this little play in mm-hmm. my mind. And it makes me feel the emotions that I felt then.
Yeah.
And it makes it, it recalls the way I, like yeah. I can recall.
And it can be a cascade event. So uh-huh. you think of your mom uh-huh. and then those initial group of neurons activate. And then because they activated downstream, another set of neurons activated. And if it's your mom and you have a great relationship with her, then it's a feeling of comfort and uh-huh. love.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. Yeah. And then because you felt love, oh, then another set of neurons consequently activate, and it's like your favorite dish that your mom cooked or mm-hmm. something like that. So it's all just interconnected, and it's like a domino effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you heard that theory that I can't remember who I heard that said this, but it was some smart person
probably.
That said like they can look at video footage of you know, like a really traumatic thing like 9/11, and they can tell you based on the video footage who's going to have PTSD and who's not. And they say that it's the people who seem to look in shock, who are sort of like not emotional, who are walking out with their yeah. faces kind of covered in soot and ash, but they're sort of in a shock state. And they're going, those people are going to have post-traumatic stress disorder, because what they're doing right now, their brain is going into this sort of autopilot mode where it's not fully taking in the experience, because if they were to fully take in the experience, it would be overwhelmingly horrifying. So they're sort of going into like a emergency autopilot mode where like only necessary functions, like
right.
let's move forward, get out of the danger zone.
And they're in shock.
Get to help. But then that means that the experience, that memory has been stored almost without the initial experiencing of it.
Right.
And then it will come back later and manifest itself in different ways. Do you think that's just the same? Do you think it's just that like?
I mean, I've never really done any investigation into like PTSD, but if I were to speculate, I would think that yeah, it's kind of like how you described. They experience something completely very traumatic, and that group of neurons that is coding for that just get so cemented into what the piece of information that they're experiencing, that every time something resembles that, this group gets so aggressively activated that it becomes kind of sometimes unbearable and very uncomfortable.
Yeah. Wow.
Or like phobias, for example. Phobias, I mean, obviously I'm just speculating here, probably have to do with that same type of
some kind of stored trauma that keeps getting relived in a very aggressive
right.
way by the play that's getting put on is very aggressive. Yeah. And
or maybe it's getting activated way too much.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe like you're going through your day-to-day life and so another thing I forgot to mention is with memory, the more that group of cells communicate with each other, the stronger their connection is and the easier it will be in the future for them to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you're studying for a test and you're reviewing the material, the more and more you review it, the more and more you learn about it, and the easier it will be to figure it out, to figure out the answer. And that's why they say studying is good, because the more you look at it, the more you're going to feed these group of neurons that are responsible for it. And in the future, the easier it'll be for those neurons to communicate again and give you the same result. When you think of phobias, maybe there's like some
you're sort of rehearsing the play.
Exactly.
You're having those neurons. I'm thinking about it like this because I'm an actor and I'm a theater guy. So I'm like, it really does seem like that. Like the studying is like, we're going to go through this process of looking at this question and it correlates to that answer. And we're going to run that simulation many, many times so that when it comes to the time that I have to take the test, or even when it just comes to real life and I have to know this stuff,
right,
I've rehearsed this play very well.
Exactly.
And I can recall this, the correct information.
Well, something that just recently happened to me was this morning I was driving to work and I was listening to music and I sort of zoned out. And I mean, that sounds very dangerous, but like I was fine. But it was really alerting to me, and it's happened to me in the past, and I'm sure it's happened to you, that for a second I forgot I was driving.
Oh, yeah.
And I, like, snapped out of it. And that goes to what we're saying is that, like, the act of driving and the same path that you're taking has become so engraved in your mind that it becomes automatic because these neurons are so used to communicating with one another that it's kind of effortless.
That was very dangerous for me when I was still drinking because I was just – I clicked into autopilot a lot where I was like, my body knows how to get home.
Yeah, that's very dangerous.
My body knows how to do this.
Yeah, that's the most dangerous, man.
And then I would, like,
kind of
come to in the driveway and be like – yeah, that's right.
Yeah, you know how they say most car accidents happen. You would think that they'd happen like on super rainy, stormy days, but they actually happen most often on normal commutes for people in a very sunny, clear day, and that's because most people are assuming that it's going to be easy and that They're being more careless.
See, I have this theory. So I've lived in New York City and I've lived in Los Angeles and I'm from Salt Lake City.
Mm-hmm.
Salt Lake City is by far the smallest of those three cities. I mean, by far. In New York City, I never in 3 years saw a car accident. Amazingly, in Manhattan where every street's just packed with cabs and you know, never saw a car accident.
Wow,
I know they happen. I know that they happen, but I never saw one. Living in Los Angeles, I mean, 10.5 million people in LA County. I do see accidents here because there's so many drivers on the road.
Yeah.
But I see an accident probably like once a month. Living in Salt Lake City as a driver there, I saw an accident every single day.
Wow.
Every single day. And every time I go back there and visit, every single day that I drive, I see a car accident.
Oh,
and
my
theory is that driving there is so lackadaisical for people.
Yeah, it seems so easy,
yeah,
right?
People don't need to be on their guard and they're not aggressively driving. When you drive in LA, you really have to kind of have your guard up,
right?
Especially if you're not from here. You've
exactly.
been experiencing this.
Yeah.
You just moved here.
Yeah, I've been here 6.5 months.
And it takes a while to get used to the way people drive, the aggressive nature of the driving, the fact that you really have to assert yourself to,
right,
like, to merge.
To do anything.
To
otherwise,
do any-
you're just going
to
sit
there. You really got to like be assertive and you really have to be paying attention. And that's what I saw in New York, too, is when you drive in an Uber in New York, you get in the back of the car or in a cab, it's kind of scary the first few times you do it. People always get so scared when they drive in a New York City cab, but those guys are really driving.
Yeah.
They're really paying attention, and it's a very engaged process,
right,
because
they're focused.
Yeah, they're really focused on like what's the best street to take. They're constantly shifting their route to like adjust for the traffic.
Yeah.
And
they're actually
because of that focus,
it.
It's less likely that they're going to get into a careless accident.
Exactly.
Whereas in Salt Lake City, people are just texting. People aren't paying attention. People are on autopilot. And so I would see accidents every single day. And the only thing I could think of is people aren't paying attention.
Yeah, exactly. That's all it is.
This commute is way too familiar for everybody. Everyone's way too comfortable. No one's really driving with a sense of an awareness that they're in a really heavy death machine that if they collide with another
they're
person.
They're just in a missile, basically.
Yeah,
they're just in a missile on wheels.
Yeah, and actually, so I think that I'm glad that you mentioned that because I've always had that theory that it's like...
that's definitely it, man.
It's too... The autopilot is dangerous. And I definitely have those times where I'm driving and I'm all of a sudden taking the exit for work and I'm like, I don't really remember...
Right.
How I got here.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that because that's when accidents arise, is when you devote less mind power to it.
Uh-huh.
And you got to really focus. But yeah, it can be scary, man. It can be really scary, but just stay focused on the road because I see car accidents every now and then, and Thankfully, traffic is usually moving slow enough that it's not serious. I mean, their car is pretty janked up, but like, you get to a place like Salt Lake City where there's probably not much traffic, and you get to go in at the speeds that you're going.
That's the other thing too, is the accidents that I see here are fender benders, right, in LA. They're fender
benders.
People
aren't going as fast.
And the few that I saw in New York were fender benders. Like, right. People like bumping into each other at an intersection. The accidents in Salt Lake are brutal.
Yeah, because people are going fast, going
down the street,
man.
And people are, cars are flipped over. Yeah. And I mean, it's brutal. And so it's, yeah, it's really dangerous. One last thing I want to talk about. I mentioned Mercury in retrograde, especially when you came in. I wonder, as a neuroscientist, what your thought is on stuff like that. We've talked a little bit about
astrology,
the realm of the spirit, too. We've talked a little bit about. So I wonder if astrology is, because it's a thing that I don't spend time studying or thinking about, but it is a thing that every time someone who does spend time studying or thinking about it comes and talks to me about what's going on with my chart. They always seem to be like eerily spot on. But I don't know if that's my confirmation bias or if it's just like that they're speaking in really broad terms. I wonder though, do you think there's a possibility that that's just another language of describing nuts and bolts, just like mathematics, just like, you know, or do you think it's all just that it's mythological the same way that, you know, the creation myths and religious myths are created? What's your kind of take on that?
Well, yeah, I'm not big into the astrology.
I feel like it's like pretty anti-scientific to be like an astrologer. Yeah.
But as a Capricorn, I'm obligated to say that I don't really care. No, I'm just kidding.
Is that something that Capricorns do?
No, I have no idea. I just made that up. I am a Capricorn though. I don't know what that means. So the thing about astrology that never really made much sense to me,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, like they make all these predictions based on like the alignment of the stars at the time of your birth or like uh-huh. stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Well, when you look up at the night sky and you see stars, you're not actually seeing the star itself.
Right.
And that's something that never really aligned with me with like how they say
that. So
they're
mapping it based off of stars from light years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. From like the light that's now hitting us that actually left years ago. So actually wait, the predictions that you're making are like years and delayed.
Yeah.
It doesn't really make much sense to me. So I've never really been much into it. But what I will say is that I am a firm believer of a higher order of things.
Oh, you are?
Yeah, I am. Uh-huh. I definitely don't think that.
Do you believe in God or like an intelligent design?
I believe in greater beings. I think that categorizes me as agnostic. I believe something is out there. Something uh-huh. is bigger. But I wouldn't necessarily put a name to whatever it is.
Sure.
And I wouldn't say that it's just one or many. I don't know. It's just,
yeah.
I definitely think that we are living in this reality, and I think that there's tiers to it. I think there's a...
To me, I think that's where people get in trouble is anytime they start trying to get too specific about that stuff.
Yeah.
See, I think it's also very good to have people in the scientific field who acknowledge that like there seems to be some kind of thing coursing through this. But like when anyone gets in trouble with that, for me, is when they start going, yeah, and it's a dude and his name is whatever, like his name is his name is like whatever the hell, and they're like, and he looks
why
like
is he
this
he?
And why is it a dude? It's one dude, it's three dudes, they've got beards, they don't have beards, that like when you start getting really specific about your like God mythology is when I think that it's like, why do you have to be so specific about
it?
Why do you have to be so specific about something that you clearly don't know? Of course you don't know.
Yeah, nobody knows.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But having said that, I think that there, I mean, I'm also really fascinated by like astronomy and like the universe itself.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think that there's two very complicated things in this reality. There's the universe itself,
mm-hmm.
and then the universe inside our head, which is the brain, because it's just as complicated as it.
What do you think about the theory that the entire universe is just cell structure on a larger organism, and that like the thing that we feel as quote unquote God is just like we might be in the neural network of a larger being,
right.
who's also in a larger network of another. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Something I've said in the past is I said to my fiance, I was like, I think I got it figured out. She's like, what? And I was like, I think, I was like, if you look all around you at every type of organism, whether it's a plant, a succulent, a piece of grass, a tree, whatever it is, a flower, it's all yearning for one thing, to just be, to survive, to continue.
To just get the chance to exist.
Yeah, to propagate. And I was like, I think that we are the universe itself, but we are the universe's reflection on itself, coming from a subjective point of view. Each one of us, with the ability to think, feel, speak, communicate, I think it only makes sense to me, and I'm not like hugely spiritual on this, this is just a thought, that every single one of us are the universe in totality trying to look at itself.
Jesus Christ.
Isn't that...
That's a very poetic theory. That's one I haven't heard. You know, I spend a lot of time talking to people about, you know, simulation theory,
right,
or, you know, multiverse theory, or, you know, like multiple dimensional theory, that like this is just one plane of reality. We're not seeing the whole picture. That's a really poetic version that I really like, and I haven't heard that one.
Yeah.
That we're kind of... Because it definitely seems logical that anything that's in the universe is the universe, right, and we are in the universe, and so
we're just a particular branch of the universe that's trying to get a glimpse of itself.
It's almost the universe's self-portrait.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really cool.
I think that's what it is. So you ask me about astrology. I think it's all bundled up together, man.
It's all just different language to try to get at the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. And so I don't know about these. They seem to go, that's where I don't like it, is that they seem to go really far-fetched with like the predictions. They're like, month, Capricorn,
right,
you are right in for a rough time. You better stay indoors. And I'm like, wow.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, how could you extrapolate that just based on like the positions of the stars, which is only a consequence of the rotation of the Earth?
But then, and I, because I'm totally 100% with you, I'm like, why do you have to be so specific and right, like so confident in your like,
yeah.
But then also like every time I'm feeling shitty, one of my astrologer friends is like, well, guess what's happening right now? And I'm like, what? And they're like,
Mercury's in retrograde.
I'm like, God damn it.
Yeah, man.
So, you know.
It's tough, man.
Yeah.
I don't fall victim to that. I don't try to pay much attention to it because there's nothing, to me, there's nothing really solid that's there.
Yeah,
And as a scientist, you're conditioned to like force something solid out of whatever it is you're looking at, something that you can actually touch and test.
Yeah,
and astrology has none of that.
Yeah,
unfortunately, it is a very.
It's fun.
It's fun. Yeah, it's.
I'm probably gonna have someone on here to talk about it at some point.
It is fun.
It's fun.
It's fun to just speculate. It's fun to.
And when I talk to people who know a lot about it, it actually is like cool to hear them like break it down for me, and I'm like, oh well, it's clearly like a very well thought out and well constructed kind of language,
right?
Whether or not I think that you've tapped into literal truth and that you're speaking the literal truth of the universe, I doubt. But like, you probably have tapped into
something,
bits of truth.
Yeah,
just like every religion, like has
I mean, the ancient civilizations used to like worship the stars and like actually plan their life around it.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's got us.
And there's probably some reason why we're pulled to do that,
right,
other than just they're twinkly and cool. There might be something in our very physiology that, like a tree fundamentally understanding the language of math without needing to study it, there might be something in us that calls us out, that calls out to that kind of...
And why are we called out to there? Maybe maybe we really deep down innately know that, like, we come from there.
We are. Well, I mean, of course we do. Like we, of course we do. Like, we literally do.
Oh, you know this?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, like, we are... We are there, and that's where we came from. So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Exactly. We're not separated from. Like, I always think about that when I'm outside. I'm like, I'm just in a big room with all this stuff. All
right.
You know, like, there's not a wall between me and this stuff. I'm in a big room with. I'm seeing the light that's gotten from thousands of years ago, But the moon's right there. I'm in a big room with the moon.
Right.
I'm in a big room with the sun. I'm in a big room with, you know, so.
So we are it.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I agree. I 100% agree.
Yeah.
We are it.
Uh-huh. Dang. Cool.
No, it is cool. It is all very cool.
Yep.
It's good to feed curiosity. I think I'll always believe that. I think I'll take that to my grave. I mean, that's what I think about life.
Uh-huh.
Life is meaningless without learning. I mean, every day you wake up, and as soon as you open your eyes, you're taking in information.
Mm-hmm.
You're learning.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're learning very boringly, and you're always looking at the same thing, which I highly discourage anyone from doing. You should always explore on new things and feed that curiosity of yours. And I think curiosity is also like a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
The more you feed it, the more prone you will be to feed it more.
Yep.
I think it's something that needs to be conditioned and something that we need to keep doing as human beings in all stems of life.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's solid. How do you feel?
I feel great.
You feel good?
Yeah, I feel good. I feel like we could keep talking.
Oh, absolutely. We absolutely could. But I think we got it. I think we got like a really nice
great picture.
Thanks for coming over.
Dude, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This was really, really cool. Awesome.
Yeah. I love talking about life and everything in it.
I'm glad that there's people like you in this discipline and that like it that it's full of people with that curious explorer spirit, because it does seem very altruistic and pure and also just like good. Like we just need everyone still.
Yeah.
We need the people who are figuring out stuff about the planets. We need people who are figuring out stuff about the heart. We need people figuring out stuff about the soul. And we need people,
all sorts of people.
And we need people figuring out stuff about the brain. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we need all sorts of people. You're absolutely right.
We need all sorts of people. We need people figuring out musical notes to entertain, because that's also a really big part of it. We need people figuring out the ways to embody a certain character for entertainment. That's hugely important. We need people to just work.
We need people to do the bad shit so that we can kind of like set up a set of morals and ethics, like by going like, oh, that's bad because it hurts people in this way and is an antisocial in this way. You know, we need all of it.
I was not expecting to condone bad shit tonight, but you're 100% right. We do need people to do the bad shit.
Otherwise, we would have nothing to like. I mean, I guess without it, we would just be this kind of benevolent, like, magnanimous species.
Yeah.
But like the bad shit's what gives us contrast and what makes altruism altruism and what makes, you know, like the good stuff the good stuff. So
You wouldn't know the good if it weren't for the bad. If you wouldn't know what to compare it to.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Cool. That I feel good about that.
I feel great.
All right. Thanks, man. Yeah, so there's that, huh? That guy really blew my hair back, I'm gonna tell ya. That thing there near the end where he talked about how he thinks that the universe is, or that we are the universe reflecting on itself, that that's what life is, that really blew a hole right through my whole conception of it all. And I've said that now to like 10 people since I had that conversation with him. I've brought up that whole idea of life being the, kind of an appendage of the universe so that the universe can reflect on its own existence. Because like, why not? I mean, that actually, as weird as that sounds, it actually seems to be kind of self-evident that like anything that's in the universe is the universe. We're not separated from the universe. If we're in it, then we are it. Wild. And that's the kind of fun stuff that can come from thinking about consciousness and what is the self, and is the self an individual thing, or is it all connected? You know, there's an episode of Rick and Morty where Rick dates this thing called Unity, and it's like a parasite that infects planets and then turns everyone into the planet into it. It turns them all into kind of this unified consciousness. And so Rick will be dating this parasite thing, and he'll basically be dating everyone on the planet because they're all Unity, because they've all been infected by this
Parasite. If you don't watch Rick and Morty, watch Rick and Morty. It's amazing. Otherwise, you might not get what I'm talking about, but essentially that's the premise. Is he's dating this like intergalactic parasite that goes planet by planet and kind of consumes all the life there and turns all the life into it. It's kind of like the Borg on Star Trek. But the thought I had after that conversation was, what if that's just kind of what it is we actually all are this universal consciousness, and we just don't know it. We just think, because of our separate little pods that we go around in, that we're actually separated, but really we're all experiencing things together. You see it right now with something like what's going on right now with this global crisis, that the species collectively is really sharing a lot of energy right now and sharing a lot. Like, our experience right now is very on the same page. We're all having the same conversations right now, and we're all like feeling the same angsts and the same fears and the same worries, and we're all dealing with it in slightly different ways. Some of us are dealing with it by going into complete denial and going to the beach and acting like this isn't happening and going on spring break when we really shouldn't be, or going in giant groups to the airport to welcome home missionaries. But some of us are, you know, staying home. Most of us are, it looks like. But again, you know, we're experiencing this thing in what seems to be a very kind of collective way. And so, hey, what if we are unity? You know, what if we are this sort of universal consciousness and we just don't really get it? We think that we're a bunch of individuals, but really we're not. I mean, it seems like that seems plausible, right? And that could be what all the God stuff is. I don't know, and that's the whole point, you know? I just don't know. But it's sure fun to think about. I think that's it for the show this week. Again, thanks so much for listening out there during this difficult time. If you got any issues with anything that we said on the show, I said this last week and I mean it, reach out to me, let me know. If you just want to contribute to the conversation, reach out. DM me on Instagram. If you're not following the People Pleaser page on Instagram, look us up on Instagram. You can DM me there and let me know if you've got any corrections to add or anything you just want to add to the conversation. I want to hear from you. Yeah, cool. You know, People Pleaser is written, edited, produced, and hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. The show is mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music. You can use Marmalade Music for your audio project if you got a song, an EP, an album, or a podcast that needs mixing and mastering. Especially right now, reach out to Chris. People who are independent contractors right now need that business. So reach out to Chris, MarmaladeMusicSLC.com. Let him know that you listen to People Pleaser, and you can take 20% off your first project. It's a great deal. Hit him up. He does a great job. You can hear more of my music at austin-archer.com. You can see all of my projects there. Everything's linked there, austin-archer.com, or by looking up Austin Archer on Apple Music or Spotify. You can go purchase music right now, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Bandcamp right now is giving 100% of proceeds to artists. So that's a great way to donate to some independent artists out there right now, is go purchase their music on Bandcamp. Yeah, okay, I think that's all my stuff for today. Thanks so much for listening. I love you. Stay safe out there. Wash your hands. Go to the store on the day that they restock. You know, look that up. It's a fun way to get all the things that you're looking for. Okay, bye.